beyond evil, beyond your wildest imagination.
Here because each of us, in our own way, fights with the hope of a better tomorrow.
You didn't think you could just walk away, did you? This ends now.
Hello and welcome again to Animation Aficionados Crossing Over with Tooncast Beyond. We are continuing our look through the DC animated original movies. Once again, I am your host, Ben, and we're joined by my co-host, TV's Mr. Neil.
Salutations.
And that's it?
I expect something a little bit more epic from you every time he introduces you.
Well, I've just been kind of like sitting back and, you know.
And from a Tooncast Beyond, we have with us TFG1 Mike.
Hello.
And also from Tooncast Beyond, we have Steve Megatron.
Hello.
And tonight we'll be talking about the Superman, Batman, Apocalypse. Which, I'll start this off as saying that this is adapted by another Jeff Loeb rag.
Was it Loeb? I don't think it wasn't Loeb this time, was it? Or was it Loeb the entire run?
It was Loeb the entire Superman, Batman run, yes.
Okay, maybe it's because it's different art.
Yes, it's Michael Turner's art.
Okay, that's where I was getting the difference from.
You exchange one guy who draws Dragon Ball Z-style male bodies with a guy that draws only one face. So. Okay, yes, I know Michael Turner's dead and he has a fan following, but Michael Turner can only draw one face. And this one is, in my opinion, the first Superman Batman trade paperback at Public Enemies was just kind of silly and stupid, and like I said, the animated movie was Bruce Timm fixing all the errors. This, you know, the second one didn't have as many outright stupid errors in the actual original writing, but overall, I just didn't find the plot very satisfying. Neil, what are your thoughts?
Well, I've never actually read the comic, and you know what? I'm not really that familiar with Michael Turner. The characters didn't look that bad to me. Superman's face was kind of not my favorite Superman, but
at least there wasn't a dent in his face.
Oh yeah. At least he didn't have like childhood acne that permanently left him disfigured. But yeah, he did kind of have like the wide Batman jaw that only Batman should have.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
You know, Batman looked okay, and Wonder Woman certainly looked okay, and
Darkseid looked terrible though.
I don't know. The only time that the faces really caught me off guard was what was it? Was it Lila? Was that her name?
Yeah.
She wakes up in bed. I'm like, who the hell was that? Because she hadn't really been introduced, and you know, you don't know who the character is because you know. She's not as familiar as Batman, Superman, or Wonder Woman, so right. You know, I didn't understand that scene at all until like maybe 10 minutes later.
Well, to me, it's just a really weird premise because this whole premise of this book is end movie is to introduce the concept of Kara Zor-El back into the post-crisis continuity, into the post-crisis fans. For people who don't know, I'm going to give a very, very brief overview of what Supergirl was like in the comics before this. There was no Supergirl because DC for 10 years had a mandate that Superman is the sole survivor of Krypton. There is no other Kryptonians. There's no dogs. There's no horses. There's no cats. There's no monkeys. It's just Superman. And that, of course, means no cousin. So the animated series was able to get by this with, as everyone know, Kara and Z, which was from Argos, not technically Kryptonian. But for years, you know, there was an issue. So the original Supergirl, post-crisis Supergirl, was a shapeshifter from a pocket dimension named Matrix.
Oh, good Lord. This is exactly why I do not read comics.
Because they're so convoluted and screwed up.
It gets better. It gets better. Matrix was around for a while, and it was kind of exciting because, you know, she was a shapeshifter, and it was kind of fun. And then she sort of lost her shapeshifting powers when she merged with a dying woman named Linda Danvers.
Oh.
And then she became the Earth Angel.
Yeah, I remember that.
And this is when Peter David was writing her, and Peter David had some interesting ideas with that. And basically, this Supergirl had to go away. And pretty much vanished overnight because then all of a sudden it's like, you know, hold it. We're going to introduce the pre-crisis Supergirl origin again for a new Supergirl. So Peter David, you and Linda, whatever her name is, Earth Angel, whatever, she goes away now. And pretty much that's what happened. And the origin pretty much is very similar to the pre-crisis origin. You know, she arrives at Earth fully grown. In a, you know, except the whole premise of the movie, just like the comic, is everybody's fighting to get her. You know, the Amazons want her. You know, Darkseid wants her. Superman wants her. Boy, that just sounds wrong. But
that sounds so wrong, dude.
But that is the premise. Am I wrong?
Well, he wants her to find her own path. He doesn't want her to be used by either the Amazons or Darkseid, obviously.
That's true, but the like I said, the whole point is everybody sees her as like a power player. Everyone sees her as like a power player that they want to get her and influence her, and obviously Superman's motives are the most pure, but at the same time, it's everybody wanting her.
Yeah. What about you, Steve? What were your initial thoughts on the movie?
I wasn't particularly thrilled with the animation style right off the bat.
I didn't mind it so much.
Yeah. What's that?
Yeah, I was about to say, but I'll let you continue. I'm sorry.
I much preferred the Public Enemies over this, just because it was more Justice League and Batman animated series over this. I didn't care for this particular style. But the overall premise of it wasn't bad, but there was just, I don't know, at points it seemed like there was too much going on.
Yeah. I honestly, going back and watching Public Enemies in this back-to-back, I honestly prefer this animation style because Public Enemies, Superman's face looked horrible. It just was bad.
I just prefer Batman over... And the other right. one over this, but
even that though, Steve, because Batman's face in this looks a hell of a lot better than it does, at least to me it does, in this than it does in Public Enemies. And the animation style in Public Enemies was so weird to me. It wasn't even close to DCAU style at all.
It was closer than what this is.
But this doesn't hurt your eyes.
No. This bothered me.
Did it?
Yeah.
Any other comic stuff you want to get out of the way, Ben?
Well, not really. I think those are the major points. Like I said, this doesn't have as much outright stupidity as Public Enemies does, because I think someone reread Public Enemies and someone realized, you know, what happens when you give Jeff Loeb that much control. And yeah. Thankfully, this one doesn't have Superman offering robot sex dolls to teenagers, so.
Close enough. Oh, my God. The only thing, there's only a couple things I don't like about this film. First of all, I would have preferred if it was either Tim Daly or George Newbern. Or no, wait, what? Yeah, wait. This was Tim Daly, wasn't it?
Yeah, I was going to say. What the hell are you talking about?
Tim Daly. I'm thinking fired. Of All-Star. I just finished watching All-Star. I'm thinking of All-Star.
Fired.
Anyway, shut up. I like that they brought back Daly, Conroy, and Eisenberg.
And Asner. And Asner.
Right, but as far as them being the big three of the voices of those three characters, I like the playfulness between the three of them because they're all friends and all that. Ed Asner as Granny Goodness has always creeped me the hell out, and that's what he's supposed to do as Granny Goodness.
It's hilarious.
It is. It's very hilarious. I think because this version of Granny is a little bit more off-kilter. Well, she's a little bit more off-kilter, so his voice came out more male than female, I think, in this one. I don't have an issue with it. The only real voicing that I have an issue with, while he's an excellent, excellent actor, why did they get Andre Brower to do Darkseid? Why?
He doesn't have any power in his voice.
He doesn't. I mean, at all. He has power in his voice when he's on screen acting, when you're actually seeing him with his voice, but him in voiceover just doesn't work. I don't know why they couldn't have gotten Michael Ironside. That would have been awesome if they could have.
Yeah, it would.
But I just... That's the only thing that takes me out of this movie. I will say that all the fight scenes are great. I posted on Facebook the infamous Supergirl shopping picture, and Neil commented on it because I...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I said they should have had this. If they had this throughout the entire movie, I probably would have enjoyed it more.
Yeah, and I said if that was the case, I would never finish the movie. I'd keep freeze-framing it.
Yeah, exactly. I like the beginning dress, that black number she had on when they were shopping. I didn't really care for the bikini part of it later in Dark. I don't know. It just didn't do anything for me. But the action in this is great. The scenes are great. The fights are great. Honestly, the first time I watched this, and even now when I watched it before we started the record, I thought when they went back to Smallville, movie was over. I thought it was over, and then all of a sudden, Darkseid's hand comes out of the floor. God. And I was like, oh my God, are you serious? This is not over yet? Because I seriously thought it was over when they went back to the farm. And then, boom, there's Darkseid showing up kicking ass.
Getting his ass kicked.
Okay, well, he's kicking ass at first. I mean, he launches super... He basically Omega beams Superman into the sun. And then, of course, Kara kicks his ass afterwards. I don't know. I really like this movie mainly for the action scenes. The story is fairly well told. The voice acting is great for me. Other than that, I mean, that's really my only thoughts on it as far as the actual film. What about you, Ben? I'm going to try to not contain you here, but I'm going to try to organize you a little bit. What is it exactly that you don't like about this movie? Is it the story? Is it the action? What is it that you think makes this a bad film?
To me, it's the fact that in the idea of story, there really isn't that much story. Except for you have something that substitutes story as a way to supplant you to the next action scene. And that's what this is. This is just, let's get to the next action scene. Okay, we're done with the action scene. Let's get to the next action scene. I mean, I like action, but you know, personally to me, I don't like when they try to adapt every famous current comic book artist art style into a mishmash with Bruce Timm's art style. And, you know, like I said earlier, I'm not a big fan of Michael Turner's artwork. If it was Ted Turner, he'd colorize everything.
Nowadays it would be 3D.
Ooh, yeah.
Oh, bad.
And And I don't think the mismatch works. And then there's also that scene where Batman is in the action figure armor on Apocalypse.
Oh, God.
I like that scene for one simple reason.
Because you have the action figure?
No. Damn. It's the only reason why I like that scene on Apocalypse when he's flying around is when the dogs first come out and he's like, damn. Because it's so refreshing to hear Kevin Conroy curse as Batman.
He does in the Arkham games.
He also cursed in Gotham Knight somewhere, so there.
Yeah, but Gotham Knight is nothing but six individual stories that have no continuity whatsoever.
That's true. But like I said, it's just the fact that it's like this. There's such a thing as adaptation decay, but every time I see Bruce Timm picking something that is like a masterpiece to begin with and try to adapt it, I know he's doing his damnedest. And like I said, I always give him credit for doing his damnedest. And this one certainly has less flaws than the other Superman Batman title, but it just still leaves me so underwhelmed watching it because it's still has every element of that story I didn't like to begin with. And unlike Under the Red Hood, you know, they kept so much of that story in there that it's still not enjoyable for me. And I guess that's because I read the original book and wasn't impressed with it. I guess that I'm jaded because of that. I'm sorry if I am, but that's how I am.
Well, and that's fine. I think just coming from someone, and Steve can attest to this too after I finish this thought, I think coming from us who just mainly watch the animation, this is on par with some of the other good DC Universe animated movies. This isn't bad. Like, this isn't Doomsday bad. This isn't Gotham Knight bad.
No.
No, I'll agree to that.
I mean, this movie, it does have its flaws. It, you know, but it just, I don't know, I just really, really enjoyed it for what it was. Even without having read the comic, even if I go back and read the comic now, I don't care. I'm still going to enjoy the movie.
In the comic, there's a scene where Superman uses his heat vision and cuts Darkseid's side open, and it reveals he's filled with cotton candy.
This is exactly why I don't read comics, ladies and gentlemen.
Because they're fucking stupid.
Okay, I'm sorry. I just had to reveal that part because I remember reading it. I kept on looking at that page trying to figure out what Mike Turner was trying to tell us the reader was happening.
Sir, so what you're saying is he ain't a Powerpuff Girl.
I also have to say that this story is the beginning of what I call the pussification of Darkseid.
The pussification. Nice.
If it's not in animation, in animation, if it's not Michael Ironside, Darkseid does not mean anything to me whatsoever.
Well, like I said, it's just the fact that he was physically beaten. I mean, there's that scene where Superman was doing super speed tornadoes around him and was like doing that shit to his face. I mean,
yeah,
that was bullshit. I mean, the whole idea of Darkseid is he's a physical villain that could physically challenge Superman. But if you have every time he shows up, Superman just pones his ass, you can't take it seriously anymore. And that's the problem. And this story was the beginning of the pacification.
From an animation standpoint, Steve, what other things did you like or didn't like about this one?
Animation-wise?
As far as just animation in general, as far as it being an animated movie, not really the style, but just the movie as far as being a cartoon itself, what did or didn't you like about this one?
I like that they gave some other people, like Batman, some balls in this as far as having him basically blackmail Darkseid. Telling him that I've activated the Hell Spores. It'll destroy your planet. You know, do what I tell you or else. So, but and it was funny seeing Darkseid go, okay, you've outsmarted me. I'll let you go with that. You know, but I like the animation for the, you know, as far as like how it's going through the storyline.
Mm-hmm.
I still hate Batman's design in this, but the rest of them look, I'll give you that they look much better than Public Enemies other than that character. Yeah. I think at points it kind of got, I don't know, either a little bit redundant of they're going to go try and kidnap said character, and then they lose, and then they lose, and then, you know, so I mean, it's just kind of annoying seeing that happen over and over.
Yeah.
And then towards the end, I like the end fight scene, although it I have to agree, it was kind of just, it kind of sucked. I could have seen if Superman and Kara had beat Darkseid's ass, because Superman technically doesn't really go that far ever.
Yeah.
But as far as animation, I don't know what he does in the comics, and I quite frankly don't care, but
fair enough,
because I don't want to get into that ball of wax there. So
the only, oh, go ahead.
But yeah, I'd have to say that this movie overall was enjoyable as a standalone separate thing.
And really, the only thing that ties this to Public Enemies is the fact that you have the voice actors back in the beginning, where they say, well, we're not going to talk about President Luthor's impeachment again. I mean, that's pretty much the only ties between this and Public Enemies. Not that I want a Wonder Woman comic book history lesson, but just from watching Justice League and Justice League Unlimited, Paradise Island is women only. To my knowledge, what the hell are they doing allowing men on the island with Batman and Superman? That would never.
Yeah.
And where the hell is Hippolyta? That would, as much as I like.
She was
that,
dead.
Oh, she was dead in this? Okay.
Well, this happened after Our World's at War and Hippolyta died in Our World's at War, and you don't want to know about that. If you do, ask me and I will tell you, but don't, because it was a stupid summer crossover event.
Okay, she's dead. Okay, I understand that. I don't mind her not being there. I like that Diana is the ruler at this point, but can you explain to me in like 140 characters or less why the hell they're allowing men on this island when it's always been said before there's no men allowed on there?
I can't
because
do it.
They have to reproduce.
I can't do it in 140 characters or less because. What you're asking for is to know the history of Themyscira in the comics. That is not easy. That's not okay. I'll try to do it in 2 minutes or less.
Okay.
Okay.
Sounds like he's getting ready for a hurdle here.
It is a hurdle. Okay.
Go ahead.
It all started when Diana died once in the line of duty and became the goddess of truth. And to punish her own mother, Hippolyta, for making her die, she made her mother turn into Wonder Woman. And Hippolyta as Wonder Woman went back in time and became the Wonder Woman of the Justice Society of America. She continued this until Diana became Wonder Woman again and forced her mother to go back to Themyscira, which she really didn't want to do. This continued onwards for several years, with both of them sort of sharing the duty of Wonder Woman, but not really, because it was mostly Diana, except for Hippolyta sometimes subbing. And then it all culminated to Our Worlds at War, when they wore the metallic funky chicken armor to fight Imperiex, which was a stupid story, and Hippolyta died. So Diana took the reins of Themyscira and decided to open it up to the world.
Oh.
Wow.
And that was the abridged version.
Okay, alright, that's fine. I mean, and plus, you know, Superman and Batman I can see, because technically they are her two best friends at this point.
Yeah.
But still, when I, just coming from the animation standpoint of watching cartoons and watching Justice League and just learning of it through that, the first time I watched this, I was like, wait, why are the Amazons not attacking them? Because they're on the island and there's, you know, it's a lesbian island, for crap's sake.
Well, I think that's part of the problem is they don't. No, the lesbian thing's okay, but the problem is this is so ingrained in the continuity of the comics it came from that they didn't change anything around at all for a new viewer, and that's why you have these questions about, wait, what's the deal with Themyscira? Because they didn't change anything around to make it fit with the perceptions of someone coming in fresh.
Right.
And you got to admit that regardless of whether you're liking it or not, that certainly rings true.
Yeah.
No, they just wanted to reproduce, so they needed some good, strong men.
All right, let's...
If you want to really have your brain break, ask me about when Clayface was briefly at Wonder Woman Villain. Okay, next.
Oh. No.
Because he wanted to go bounce a wow.
No, Clayface was a Wonder Woman villain because he wanted to steal some of the mystical clay she was made out of.
Oh, that makes sense. That makes so much sense.
He wanted to become one with her Schwartz.
Good lord. All right, let's talk about the cast a little bit. As I goofed up before, because I was thinking about the other movie that we'll talk about later, you have Tim Daly, Kevin Conroy, and Susan Eisenberg reprising their roles. You have Ed Asner reprising his role. This was a new Barda, wasn't it? It wasn't the same voice of Barda as in Justice League and Batman Beyond, right?
That was a new Barda.
Yeah. She sounded similar to the old ones, but... to the other ones that have been in animation before, but I kind of figured it was a new Barda.
No, the old Barda was Farrah Fawcett. The one in the Apocalypse was Julianne Grossman.
Oh.
And, yeah, Farrah Fawcett did the Batman Beyond and Justice League Unlimited.
Right. You got Tara Strong in this as...
Lashina.
As Lashina. That's pretty awesome. Andrea Romano as Stompa. Andrea is a good sport. Even though she's a voiceover and casting director, she will lend her voice whenever it's needed.
She will jump in.
Yep. Overall, I like the voice cast outside of Darkseid. I mean, outside of Andre Brower. No disrespect to him as an actual actor, but... his voice just does not fit Darkseid. I think if you had Michael Ironside back, or if you had anyone else doing it other than Andre Brower, it would have sounded a hell of a lot better, even with that crappy animation model on him.
Maybe Lawrence Fishburne.
That would have been fucking awesome. You want to talk about going into the Matrix? There you go. Red pill, blue pill, baby. What the hell? I don't know. Neil, what did you think of the overall voice cast?
I liked it. I actually liked Ed Asner as...
I do too. I just think it's weird.
I was cracking up because I saw Ed Asner's name in the opening credits. I'm like, oh, Perry White's going to be in this.
Shh.
Boy, was I wrong.
Yeah.
That's really the only standout to me, just because I'm so used to all the other characters. It's right, like, yeah, it's Kevin Conroy and Tim Daly. Yeah, I know what to expect. Yeah, that's really all I have to say about the voice cast.
What about you, Steve?
I really like the voice cast that they chose for this. It was nice to see some of them come back, and then the ones that they chose for the other ones. I mean, I agree with Darkseid not being as great as he could have been, but the rest of them were great.
Yeah. And I thought Summer Glau did a really good version of Supergirl.
Oh, hell yeah.
The only thing that really ticked me off about that character, though, was, I want to be an Earth girl, and all that requires is junk food and shopping, ladies and gentlemen.
I kind of like the idea that she's a little more... immature girlish as opposed to Wonder Woman or any of the other female characters.
Yeah.
You know, you gotta kinda balance it out.
Yeah. Yeah. And Harbinger, she was really just a harbinger of her own death, really. I mean, I don't know how she didn't see that, but
well, I think she did see that.
Well, she saw it, but we were made to believe that it was Kara, not her.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if she knew it was herself, because everyone was like, Harbinger is seeing these visions of Kara, and it's Superman holding Kara in his arms. And it turns out he took his cape and threw it over Harbinger, and it was her dying, not Kara. don't know. Ben, what do you think about the voice cast?
It's a very good voice cast. It's just, you know, you can get the best actors ever. You can get Liam Neeson in a movie, but it's still Battleship the movie.
Oh, jeez.
God. I don't even know where to go from that. Oh, my God. Well, I guess I can bring up the trivia, or not the trivia, but the box office stuff. So far, it has made $5,920,000 in change, and it has sold 357,000 units. Yeah, it still hasn't beaten Doomsday. I don't think... I'm not sure. Honestly, at this point, as far as the gross for these films, the only thing that's probably going to beat Doomsday's almost $10 million in gross sales is if they did The Killing Joke.
I don't think so. It's The Killing Joke is a story that's so incredibly dark, so incredibly, you know, it was written by Alan Moore, and Alan Moore says it's his worst work. No, he actually did. He actually said it's his worst work.
I don't know. All right, so let's go ahead and rate this, I guess. For me, it's a 3, considering it's the only DC movie that's actually on Netflix at this point in time. I did have it on DVD for a while, but I don't collect DVDs anymore. I would say if you're a collector of these movies, get the 2-disc edition DVD. It is a good DVD, but for me, it's a 3. What about you, Steve?
I'd have to agree it's a 3.
Neil?
I'll give it a 3. It's worth watching, and I don't think if you pay money for it, I don't think you're going to be out that much, but it's nothing I would actually own.
Yeah. Ben?
I would not own this. I watched it on Netflix streaming, and that's as much as I'd recommend it. That's a 2, right?
That's a 3.
Okay, that's a 3. It's a 3. I would not... It's, like I said, it's a testament to Tim's work to do adaptations of lesser works, and this is definitely a much better adaptation than Public Enemies.
Right, yeah. It is on DVD, as I said. It's on Blu-ray. It's on 2-disc edition. It's on single disc edition. Now the 2-disc edition actually includes the short, because as of last episode, they started including shorts on these movies. First up, we had Spectre. Now we had the Green Arrow short. I actually kind of liked this.
It didn't really do anything special to me. The Green Arrow short was, okay, Green Arrow's at an airport fighting some terrorists. Okay.
Yeah, it was nothing spectacular. It was kind of cool, but ultimately forgettable.
I thought out of all of the voices for Green Arrow, besides Ken Schreiner, who did him in Justice League Unlimited, I thought Neil McDonough did a pretty good job. I mean, for what, a 5-10 minute short? Did a pretty good job voicing Green Arrow. You had Malcolm McDowell, Steve Bloom as Count Vertigo, Grey Delisle as Black Canary, John DiMaggio as Mercenary One, and as Ariel Winter as the Princess. The shorts that they're doing on these movies now, it's just a bonus feature. I mean, the Jonah Hex short was good. The Spectre short was okay.
Hex short was better than this short.
Okay, and that's fine. The Jonah Hex short was awesome, but I'm just saying that as far as the voice cast and as far as the fact that these shorts are now included on this, it's just a bonus. I mean, you know, I don't know. Well, I know of one that we'll get to later, but I don't know if any of these actual shorts that are on the DVDs, the actual short films, could be turned into one of these films. I just don't think that they have that kind of staying power. Jonah Hex, maybe, but as far as the other Spectre and the Green Arrow one, no. I mean, this is a nice little short animated film, and that's all it needs to be. So I think we are going to take a break here on Tooncast Beyond. We're going to go to some ads, and we will come back after that with the overall final thoughts and the closing of the show.
Hi, I'm Phil Lamar, voice of Green Lantern in Justice League, and you're listening to the GeekCast Radio Network.
Like animation? Come listen to Animation Aficionados.
And if you disagree with us, you could be a guest on a future show.
Available on iTunes, the Zune Market, and animationaficionados.com.
The Webcast Beacon Network has been covering and promoting creativity and the creative process since 2007, starting with the Webcomic Beacon, a topical webcomics podcast with a jovial bunch of misfits like your local morning radio show. Also, the Webcomic Beacon Newscast, recaps, reviews, and discussions of community and industry news relative to comic creators, especially of digital distribution. Also, the Tropecast, the ever-tangential discussion of literary and visual memes. And finally, Web Fiction World. Before webcomics, there was independent and self-published web-release written fiction and literature. Find this all at webcastbeacon.com. Be sure to grab a master RSS feed or master iTunes feed and not miss a thing.
Hey, I'm Gary.
I'm Greg.
I'm Chuck.
And I'm Justin.
Join the four of us every week on the internet's number one G.I. Joe podcast, What's on Joe Mind?
That's right. It's Joe news, reviews, and special guests like you've never heard them before delivered right to your MP3 player.
Think of it as Joe Talk meets Sports Talk. And we make fun of Chuck.
Right. Hey.
We're just kidding, Chuck. Kinda.
Yeah. Sometimes Chuck makes fun of himself.
Right. Hey.
It's What's on Joe Mind. Every week on the GeekCast Radio Network, InsidePulse.com, Stitcher Smart Radio, and iTunes. Download and listen today.
Can I say something about Transformers?
No!
Welcome to a collaboration between the GeekCast Radio Network and the Pop Culture Network. This is From the Command Center, the podcast. I am your host, TFG1 Mike from the GCRN, and joining me is Zordon himself. Scotty Cash.
That's right, Scotty Cash from the Pop Culture Network, and today we're introducing you to the audio version of From the Command Center, the podcast that will entail our intake on Mighty Morphin Power Rangers, the episodes, the seasons, and all that other good stuff.
2012 marks the 30th anniversary for Masters of the Universe. We here at the GCRN are celebrating with a brand new series of podcasts. The Powers of Grayskull series will cover every episode of every MOTU cartoon. Yes, even that crappy New Adventure stuff. Join Optimus Solo and TFG1 Mike as they tell tales of Eternia, discover the myths of Etheria, become masters in space, and finally, masters of Grayskull. You can find the Pogs podcasts in iTunes and the web at www.geekcastradio.com. Good journey!
You can now hear the GeekCast Radio Network while on the go with Stitcher Smart Radio. Stitcher is a free news and talk mobile app available for your smartphone. And when you download Stitcher to hear GeekCast Radio, you'll have a chance to win money. Downloading is quick and easy. Just find Stitcher in the App Store. During registration, hit the promo code box and enter GeekCast Radio, all one word, to get automatically entered to win $100. The latest episodes of the shows will be waiting for you in your favorites. You'll get access to lots of other amazing shows, too. Always available to you on demand, no syncing. It's Stitcher Smart Radio. Don't forget to enter promo code GeekCast Radio when you register.
All right, we are back here on Tooncast Beyond and Animation Aficionados. Ben, final thoughts on Apocalypse?
My final thoughts is I would rather see them try to adapt more work other than anything by Loeb, or just try to do some more original stories. I mean, I like more original stories that are more abstract, based off of concepts of stories, based on doing full-on adaptations, and I think anytime they do a full-on adaptation, it's hit or miss. And, you know, like I said, if it's more concept adaptation than straight-up adaptation, that's the strength of the Bruce Timm team.
Yeah. What about you, Neil?
I'm just going to hit upon a couple things that I didn't touch upon in the first part of the episode. I like the choreography in the movie. I thought the fighting was very good, even if I didn't particularly care for who was on the beating end. And the thing I kind of didn't like was that, you know, Batman, you know, he's a badass character, but sometimes they put him in these fights that
he has no right being in.
Yeah. When the Army of Doomsdays or no, no, I'm right. Doomsday. The Army of Doomsdays showed up. I was doing the timeout hand signal, but, yeah, otherwise, it was an okay movie. Not my favorite, but you know, I can't complain too much.
Steve.
Overall, I'd say that it wasn't bad. Not my favorite out of the DC Animated Universe stuff, but I don't hate it either, like some other ones. Definitely a watch, but not really an own.
Yeah. For me, that's one thing we actually never even mentioned in the earlier part of the episode. It was the Doomsday Army.
Yeah.
Doomsday Army did a hell of a lot more in this movie than they ever did in Superman, than Doomsday ever did in his own fucking movie.
Yeah.
but they, overall, go ahead, Neil. What?
I was going to say, they went down like bitches, though. They were just, I was like,
blood.
Yeah, I know, but still, I was like, well, so much for, I know they were a diversion, but
yeah. Overall, I would recommend this just for the returning voice actors. I do like, you know, seeing Barda in an extremely strange circumstance. That was kind of weird to me. But overall, I think it was fairly well done. And if you're, you know, if you're the everyday mainstream audience, it's good for you. If you're a comic book reader, like some people on this show, you're probably going to hate it.
Well, you know what? Even you confessed that you, as not a comic book fan, were confused by some points. So I think that's not fair to just say that this was a perfect movie, because even you had to stop and question the mascara. So that shows that this was tied too much into the continuity to begin with. I think that's not very fair.
Did I at any point in this episode say, it's a tan, a fucking tan? Not at all. I fully agree. This is, my point here is that it's not the best movie they could have made, but out of all the ones they've done to this point, it's not the worst, most unwatchable thing.
That's ever. True. Okay, that's certainly true. This isn't the worst by a long shot. There's at least
Gotham Knights,
2.5 that are worse.
Yeah. Overall, for what it is on its own, it's good. Yes, there are going to be questions, as I have had. And honestly, what's going to draw a lot of people to this is the returning voice actors, just to hear them do their voices again, I think. At least fans from the DC Animated Universe stuff would be. So, thank you for joining us here on Tooncast Beyond and Animation Aficionados Crossover. There are several ways to get in contact with us or leave feedback for the show. Visit the websites geekcastradio.com and animationaficionados.com. Leave the show's feedback in iTunes. Please do this. Follow us on Twitter. The show name there is Tooncast Beyond. Mine is TFG and Mike. Steve, what is your Twitter?
SCP21.
Neil.
Neil Saba.
Ben, what's the AA Twitter?
A Aficionados.
Become a fan on Facebook. Go to facebook.com/GeekCast or Radio Network and facebook.com/AnimationAficionados. Call the voicemail line. Tell us the show you're leaving the message for and your name. 502-526-5821. We hope you enjoyed this episode of Tooncast Beyond and Animation Aficionados and wish you'll join us next time when we will be continuing the DC Universe Animated Movie Spotlight with All-Star Superman.
One of the greatest movies ever.
I'd rather watch Doomsday at that point. For now, I am TFG and Mike with
TV's Mr. Neil,
Steve Megatron Phillips,
and Ben the host.
Thank you for listening. Until next time.
Goodbye. I'm just completely thrown off tonight. Yeah, that's the only thing I did right.
I'm still waiting for Ben's good night, but...
Good night.
Hey, yo, this is Gear, and when I'm not helping out my pal Static, I have my backpack always playing GeekCast Radio Network.
Superman's Journal, final entry. I'm dying. My turn. My cells are breaking down. I'm running out of time.
Welcome to the new world. Lay down your weapons and you won't be hurt.
I only have one chance to save the world. My last adventure is about to begin.
You know what happens when you take on Lex Luthor? If I die, you die first! Did you ever think that it would end like this?